Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. There you are, sitting on your deck or your patio. Maybe you're enjoying a summer cookout or just reading a book or merely communing with nature when you hear it. That faint bzz, bzz, bzz. And then out of the corner of your eye, this tiny black dot zooms past you. A few seconds elapse and you look down and there, on your hand, is that tiny intruder. You can't feel him, but he is dining on you. I should have said you can't feel him now, but you will, because soon that bite will begin to itch, and you'll begin to scratch, causing it to itch even more. It's a vicious cycle, made worse by the fact that if you see one mosquito, more will come and try to bite you. And so ends your summer evening outdoors. Mosquitoes aren't just pests. They spread disease and sometimes cause deadly illnesses. And as we enter high season for these bloodsuckers, we wanted to take a closer look at how we can minimize our exposure to them and prevent them from biting us. And since the climate is warming, we wanted to hear what the future might hold for living and working outdoors and dealing with these insects. And to that end, we have invited Dr. Chris Paradise to be with us. He is chair of environmental studies and a professor of biology and environmental studies at Davidson College, whose research has focused on mosquitoes. Crystal Swinger is the Environmental Health Director for Mecklenburg County, and Zachary Turner is WFAE's climate reporter. Good morning, everybody. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. For a guy who studies mosquitoes, I think it's odd that your last name is Paradise, Doctor, but that's okay. Back in 2017, Charlotte was on the list of the top 50 mosquito-plagued cities. We came out at number 9. Now, you can take that list with a grain of salt if you'd like, because it was put out by Orkin. But in your opinion, do we now have an overabundance of mosquitoes in our city?
Well, I think it depends a lot on where you are in the city. So if you're, there are plenty of localized places that are going to have high densities of mosquitoes, and that really depends on their breeding sites, where the breeding sites are.
Now, around the world, Crystal, mosquitoes cause more humans. This is an odd fact, but it's true, evidently, because I read it in 5 different places yesterday. Around the world, mosquitoes cause more human suffering than any other organism because of the diseases that they help spread. Among those diseases, the West Nile virus, the Zika virus, the Eastern equine encephalitis virus, and more. So what do we know about the diseases carried by mosquitoes in our area? Which ones are we susceptible to becoming infected with?
So for environmental health, we collect mosquito species and we track them. So we know what species are in our area. And we have about 24 or 25 different species just in Mecklenburg County. Across the state, we have about 50-55. So among those species, some of them just carry specific viruses and some of them breed in specific places. So it really is just pockets of different species carrying those different viruses. Like we do tests for West Nile, Eastern equine, lacrosse encephalitis, chikungunya sometimes we'll check on that. But West Nile is really the big one that we send into the state when we do any kind of pooling for mosquito testing.
How do you test for that?
So you collect the adult mosquitoes and we speciate them out. So we're sending them the correct species to test for. And you actually grind them in a grinder and centrifuge them. And then they test them with some equipment up at the state lab that they have.
And how many people on average in this area actually contract any of these diseases and become physically ill as a result?
So that's kind of a two-part question. Over in CD from our department, the health department, we work with them. If they have any kind of positive cases that come in medically, that's a reportable disease. And then they let us know, hey, in this area, we had a person positive for this. And our big question is, well, did they travel? Or is it locally acquired? So if it's locally acquired, then we go out and trap into that area and we do some testing and we do some preventative measures for that kind of species. Or if we send it in, and we sent in over 60 pools last year to test for West Nile and La Crosse, and we didn't get any positives. But if we were, then we would go to those areas and do a big educational campaign and collection.
Chris, she's mentioned La Crosse virus twice now as one of the mosquito-borne viruses that we seem to be susceptible to in North Carolina, and I'd never heard of that until yesterday, and I was reading it's called the La Crosse virus because it first appeared in 1960 in La Crosse, Wisconsin. But evidently, Swain, Transylvania, and Jackson counties in North Carolina have the highest incident rates of La Crosse virus spread by mosquitoes in the country. What does this virus do to people?
Well, encephalitis is a swelling of the brain, and so especially like for La Crosse, I know it's particularly bad for young children to have, and they can once they have the brain swelling, they can have long lasting effects after that. But my understanding is that.
I think we have lost Chris Paradise. So we'll come back to him in a second when we fix that. Zach Turner is with us. Unfortunately, he's in the studio, so I don't think I'll lose you. Last September, you reported that human development and climate change have made this state, North Carolina, a great home for mosquitoes. And I understand why climate change might be exacerbating that problem, and we'll certainly talk about that this hour. But what role has human development, and what do you mean by that? And what role has that played in making our state hospitable?
Yeah, in a few ways, I think human development has really made North Carolina a good home for a couple of different vector-borne illnesses. That's also including tick-borne illnesses, which you're going to see a lot in rural areas where people are living right on that rural urban boundary. But in looking at like a 2012 review of mosquito-borne illnesses, I saw that like this is primarily mosquito-borne illnesses are primarily an urban problem, in part due to the way in which water is collecting after these flood events, which we're seeing more of due to climate change. I know we're not talking about climate change right now, but in terms of like having these reservoirs of water that these mosquitoes who they can't fly very far, they can go maybe like a couple hundred meters at a time, but they're able to jump from reservoir to reservoir and make their way throughout the city. And I think that kind of helps the spreading of these diseases when you have these infected mosquitoes that are able to hop from backyard to backyard.
So I think we've regained control of Dr. Paradise. I think he's back with us. So we lost you somewhere in that question. We were talking about La Crosse virus and what it does to people, how it presents in people. I'm not sure you were finished with that or not, but you can proceed if you'd like to.
I don't know
Where you were.
what
Okay.
you missed.
So mosquitoes are carriers, doctor. Would it be correct to say that they don't become infected with the diseases that they infect us with, or do they?
Generally, no. Generally, what happens is they have to pick up the virus, and they'll pick it up from an infected person, or in some cases, they can actually acquire it from the mother and pass it down to the egg, and then they would grow up being infected in it with it. For most of the diseases that we're talking about, the mosquitoes themselves are not negatively affected. But once the mosquito bites an infected person, then acquires the virus, it has to go then from their digestive system back up through their body into the salivary glands, where they can then infect an uninfected person.
So when why do they inject anything? I mean, they're biting us because they are allegedly sucking our blood. So why are they injecting anything?
They inject saliva, which contains an anticoagulant, and that helps the blood flow into their gut.
Okay. Getting back to this climate change thing here, Zach, but perhaps there is good news and maybe bad news from this warming trend that we're experiencing. Stanford University points out that mosquitoes are what they call ectotherms, meaning that the temperature of their body is the same as that of their surroundings. So if they get too hot or they get too cold, they die. Might things become too warm for them in this region as things begin to warm up even more?
I think it's certainly a possibility, although it seems like the trend that we're seeing more is an increase in the number of mosquito days, just the amount of time of the year that they're able to be active. In North Carolina, what's interesting is that we were already hot and humid before. And so North Carolina is warming at a rate that's a little bit slower than the rest of the world, perhaps, or specifically looking at like areas more in a northern climate, like Alaska or parts of Europe. So we were already a pretty good habitat for mosquitoes to begin with, but what we're seeing now are some of these other climate impacts, like more severe weather, more flooding, which is creating more of these sort of water reservoirs where mosquitoes can lay their eggs and making it a little bit, easier for them to proliferate in that sense. And I think something that's interesting about mosquitoes is that humans are kind of collateral damage. They're mainly, in terms of the spread of these diseases kind of rely on the mosquito and then a reservoir like crows, for example, in the case of West Nile virus, to kind of hop back and forth and continue the spread of this disease. And then humans get kind of caught in the crossfire there.
And when you talk about reservoir, you're not talking about where our drinking water comes from.
No, in this case,
you're talking about little teeny amounts of water, right?
Yeah, well, I guess there's two things here. When you're talking about like infectious disease, like West Nile virus, you have an animal reservoir where the disease is kind of propagating in an animal host. Right. But then also talking about water reservoirs where the mosquitoes are breeding. And another interesting thing about North Carolina's climate and how it's changing in response to climate change is we're seeing the same amount of precipitation throughout the course of the year, but it's being condensed into these heavy precipitation events and then rapid drying afterwards. And so when you see that rapid drying and these sort of like watering holes, for lack of a better word, kind of condensed, you see these reservoir species like crows, for example, and mosquitoes coming together around the same bodies of water, and you can potentially have a higher spread of that disease.
The ins and outs of mosquitoes today on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. On the other hand, Doctor, the Berkeley School of Public Health has found that mosquitoes may be more able to adapt to climate change and rising temperatures than we previously thought. So do we know what the ideal temperature is for these bugs to really proliferate?
Well, as Zach was saying, warm and humid conditions are the optimal. I don't know if there's a perfect temperature, but maybe Crystal has something that she wants to add.
The one that I saw in one paper was like their optimal flight, like the temperature that they fly the best at is maybe around 75, 79 degrees. Like it was bizarrely cool for what I thought it would be.
Okay. Crystal?
Yeah. Well, I would just like to add that the more humid it is, the faster their eggs developed and the longer lifespan they have. So they enjoy that type of humidity that we do not enjoy. But I will say with their lifespan as well, you know, they will, when we do it for public health, we will go out and trap as long as the temperature stays above a mean of 60 degrees. Once it drops before though, as an average, then they go into hibernation, where as an adult, they freeze themselves to the side of buildings or the eggs just stop developing. So that's kind of our threshold of when we stop doing kind of surveillance and testing at that point.
Mm. How many mosquitoes do we have any idea what this mosquito count is in an average backyard? I mean, I know that I seem to be having, this is anecdotal, but I seem to be having a big problem with mosquitoes this year. They're everywhere.
Mosquitoes, they're fantastic in that they can breed in a very small thing. So a little soda cap, like right. I've seen an egg graft in a little soda cap. So anytime you have one tire and someone's like, oh, well, it's just one tire, that can't be the problem. Turns out it really is, because they have massive amounts of population they can do.
We're talking about mosquitoes, and we'll talk all about them even more as we go through the hour here on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about mosquitoes today. Why not? Because we're about to enter peak mosquito season. I thought it had already come. You come to my backyard, you'll know it's already here. Chris Paradise is with us. He's a professor and chair of the Department of Biology and Environmental Studies at Davidson College. Crystal Swinger is director of environmental health for Mecklenburg County. And Zach Turner is our climate reporter here at WFAE News. Not all mosquitoes are created equal. Chris Paradise wanted to follow up on something, but I think we may have missed him or lost him. He's here? He's here. So, Chris, I understand that different species breed in different habitats. Or not. Then we'll talk to you, Crystal, about... Get him on the phone. Okay? Thank you. Crystal, we'll talk to you about the different, not all mosquitoes spread the same diseases. Certain mosquitoes, certain breeds are more susceptible to spreading certain diseases. Which ones do we have to worry most about in this area?
So we've got, for the most part, we're really concerned with West Nile when it first came in. That's, as you referenced earlier, we checked a lot of crows and birds that were coming in just to check them for that kind of spread, to kind of see what the volume of West Nile was going to be and the impact in our community. So those type of mosquitoes are in the Culex family. And so those are the ones that we send off to be testing for West Nile and for Triple E, that kind of types of viruses. But the other ones are 80s types of genuses. And we send those groups of mosquitoes off to check for lacrosse and chikungunya. And we don't check for Zika because we don't have the mosquito species that carries Zika. So we're just on the lookout to see if that ever shows up. But that's really a competitive species with one that's very common that people see, the albopictus, which is known as a tiger mosquito. It's black. It's got the silver stripe on its back. It's easy to identify. It loves breeding in containers. It doesn't fly far and it doesn't care what kind of warm-blooded animal comes across first. It just hits the first one, whether it's your dog or your person, whoever it is. The Culex, they really like birds. So they really kind of, that's their main kind of focus. And other mosquito species just like reptiles. So they only bite snakes and turtles and things like that.
Okay. In April, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention issued an urgent alert for dengue fever, which is mosquito-borne. And in the past, the CDC has readily acknowledged the role that climate change plays in the transmission of that disease. But the Trump administration has purged federal agency websites of mentions of climate change and has sought to dismantle the scientific infrastructure that the CDC and other agencies use to understand and respond to a range of health risks, including those brought on by climate change. And under instruction from the Trump administration, the National Institutes of Health, which is the largest source of funding for medical research in the world, shut down all future funding opportunities for climate and health research. Crystal, what impact might this have on public health nationally and in local communities around the country?
So for public health, we're just going to keep doing what we do, and that is providing information to the public of tipping and tossing out that water to prevent mosquito breeding sources, calling into our office. Every county in North Carolina has a mosquito control program, and calling in if they are having any kind of service requests that they are needing and they can't find the breeding source, or they're just having a particular heavy problem, that we will go out and we either abate the problem for them or we do some kind of treatment. So we have over 800 permanent sites in Mecklenburg County where we just go and treat. We just show up every summer and we try and hit those 3 or 4 times a year. That's culverts, ditches, things like that, that remain and retain that standing water. But that's our public health charge, and that's what we focus on.
But are you crippled in any way by these cuts at the federal level and by the shutting down of research projects that deal with mosquitoes and other community illnesses that health departments are charged with spotting and shepherding us through?
I think the impact would be just that communication across the nation of any kind of research that's coming out that maybe we don't know is happening or occurring, or impacts as far as the ebbs and flows of other states around us. Like obviously we're impacted by South Carolina and mosquitoes don't care about state lines. And so just having that communication directly. I think for the long run, may see some impact, but really locally, we're just staying on course.
So do we have Chris Paradise back? Yes, we do. Okay. Mosquitoes have been referred to as the deadliest animal on the planet. I didn't know that insects were animals, but okay. And now that their numbers are on the rise, how many different breeds of mosquitoes do we have to contend with, particularly here in North and South Carolina, for that matter?
I think Crystal mentioned that there were something like 20 or 25 that were found in the Charlotte area, but I think really there are just a few that are problematic. And Crystal mentioned albopictus. That's the common name is the Asian tiger mosquito,
right?
and it's small and stripy. Legs are striped and the back is striped, and it's particularly aggressive as a biter. And probably the most common mosquito that we would encounter around here, and Crystal can correct me if I'm wrong about that. But the other thing about that particular mosquito is it's what we call a day biter, and so it's active all day long, whereas a lot of mosquito species are active just at dawn and dusk, and so that can make a difference if you're outside on your back porch, Mike, encountering mosquitoes. It could very well be that it's that particular mosquito that is coming after you.
So what are they attracted to exactly? Is it the CO2 that we are emitting as we breathe? Is it our blood type? Is it our body temperature? Is it some cologne that we have or have not applied? Is it the color of our clothing? What attracts them?
Yeah, many of those things. First, from sort of far away, up to I think about 100 feet away, they can detect CO2 and they'll sort of move up towards higher concentrations of CO2. Then, as they get closer, they can detect body temperature. So they'll look for those for, you mentioned mosquitoes are ectotherms. Well, they're typically going after endotherms for the most part, birds and mammals. And so they'll sort of cue in on body temperature. And then we all exude different chemicals from our body, different fatty acids and aldehydes and ketones, and different species will pick up on different chemicals that people are emitting that they can detect. And that's really happening closer up.
So that explains why you can be sitting next to somebody and one of you is really bothered by mosquitoes and the other one seems to be blithely unaware that they're even there. Is that why?
Yeah, that's part of it for sure. I think the other part is that some people, like myself, I can get bit by a mosquito and have no reaction at all. So sometimes I don't even know if I'm getting bit. Other people react pretty strongly.
Yeah,
So I think both.
that was going to be one of my questions. The fact that some people get bit and they may or may not feel it, or they may itch for 3 or 4 or 5 minutes and that's that they're done, and others will be scratching literally for a week afterward. Why is that?
I don't know all the answers to that. I think part of it is, since I've worked with mosquitoes for many years, I've been bitten many times, and
You're
you can
immune.
build up a tolerance to it. But I think it's also partly genetic, and in terms of how strongly your body reacts.
Crystal, do you know? Do you have an answer for that?
Yeah, so I'll kind of segue off of Chris Paradise's, the different body reactions. But the proboscis, the nose of the mosquito that goes into the body, has three straws, and three of them suck out the blood, and the other three inject what Dr. Paradise talked about—the salivary glands, the spit—to keep the blood from flowing. And so it's that spit conglomeration that reacts with each person's body chemistry. So that's why there's a strong interaction sometimes, and sometimes there's not, just depending on that person's pH of their blood, how high are the capillaries to the surface of the skin, how deep are they? There's a lot of different factors that go into there, but that's where the pathogens are too, and that's how viruses get into people or animals is it's coming in with that spit that's there while it's drawing out its blood.
Another reason to give to public radio because you will not hear about mosquito spit anywhere else. Let's talk to me about why we don't feel them when they bite us. You might itch afterward, but you look down and you're surprised that there are four mosquitoes on your arm and they're having lunch. Why don't we feel that?
Yeah, so mosquitoes, if you've ever seen one land on the surface of the water, they've got that tension where they don't even pierce the water molecules to sink, so they can stand on there. So they've got these legs that really spread out far enough that it doesn't detect on each of our nerve cells. And then when it slides in, it can sense with the heat and the surface of the skin, whatever capillary is closest to the surface. So when it's kind of hover around your body, it's analyzing like your body anatomy, finding that superficial kind of capillary, tapping into that, and then it's quick. It's in and out, and it's off its go. So one of the parts of the anticoagulant is also almost like a numbing agent for there. So it's just a little bit that it injects, and it's very good at what it does in order to get those proteins from the blood.
And am I right, Chris, that it's the female mosquito that does the biting? The male doesn't do that. Am I right about that?
That's absolutely correct. Yeah.
So how do the
Can I?
males
I'll just.
eat?
So most insects and mosquito, and this is true for mosquitoes, will do most of their eating during their larval stages. So as adults, males will occasionally take a nectar meal, and females will do that as well. But the blood meal is important for the females to obtain protein to help the egg develop.
What's their life cycle? How long did they live? As I swat them and kill them,
Yeah.
how much am I shortening their life by?
A lot in that case, but I would say that it varies tremendously by the species. So I was going to mention, you were asking about why don't we feel it? There is a species of mosquito, a floodplain mosquito that lives in North Carolina. I don't think we really have it right around here, but I know it occurs further east. And those are sometimes also called gallinippers. So some people may have heard that name before. Those are much bigger, and when they bite you'll feel it. But so they have a bigger proboscis that has sort of like a saw-like proboscis that they can that they use to get deeper into your tissues, and you'll definitely feel that.
Wow.
But I don't think I what so and your question, can you repeat your
Yeah,
question?
just the life cycle. How long did they live?
Oh, right. So that species, for instance, can develop in the larval stages can develop in less than a week at the right temperature, and then they can live for several weeks after. But as adults, most species will live several weeks in the summertime, and that's important for disease transmission because they have to take two blood meals, one to get infected, and then another one later after they lay the first batch of eggs. They have to then take another blood meal if they live long enough to lay another batch of eggs. And in that time, the virus then can go from one human host to another.
So when you say a blood meal, how much are we talking about? In other words, is it a buffet? Do they just keep eating until they've had enough, and that is their blood meal?
Well, if they can get away with it, sure. But a lot of species will take a little bit at a time, and if you try to swat it and they get away, they'll come back or they'll go to a different host. So they may have to try multiple times,
Right.
if you're not paying attention, they'll take a full blood meal and they'll fill up their stomach in one time, and it doesn't take very long, a couple minutes at most.
Wow. In your reporting about climate change, Zach, mosquitoes are increasing in number, evidently, in our area, but they're not the only insect that has increased in number as a result of this.
No.
Is that right?
Well, no, in terms of looking at like vector-borne diseases, we've also seen an increase in Lyme disease and tick-borne illnesses in North Carolina. And so some of the conditions that are going to impact the spread of that disease are going to be different from what we're seeing with mosquitoes, since they're going to be less impacted by having more of these sort of receptacles of water around. Like, you know, if you're leaving a bucket outside or a tire outside to collect water during a storm, that's not going to necessarily mean you're going to have a lot of ticks. And that's going to be something that's impacting where we're seeing these tick-borne illnesses is more in Western North Carolina. That's where we're seeing these increases, where they're able to, they also have that kind of relationship with animals and their kind of reservoirs of like a deer species that has Lyme disease. And then the tick feeds on that and then feeds on a human when they're going through the brush or when they're like going on a hike or in their backyard. And so, yeah.
We're talking about mosquitoes this morning on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. It's an itchy subject. These reservoirs, it can be, the word tire keeps coming up. I don't know that very many people have a lot of tires lying around their yard. Maybe they do, I don't know. But they certainly have little flower pots with these receptacles in them that you water your flower pots and it drains and it sits there. And that's enough. And Crystal Swinger mentioned a minute ago, a bottle cap with some water. So after a rainstorm, it's a good idea, I'm told, to go around and empty these things out so that they don't become breeding grounds for mosquitoes. But we're getting these really heavy downpours.
Right.
Isn't that enough to flood these reservoirs to the point where whatever eggs or larvae may be existing in these reservoirs are tumbling out because of the overabundance of water coming in, and then they dry out when the rain stops?
I don't know about that so much as, like, if you're having these heavy downpours, the ground is going to become more saturated. That's going to reduce its ability to, you know, absorb more water. And so you're going to end up with more standing water in areas like people's backyards. There's also a lot of human-caused impact, like lots of human development-related issues. Like if you have a highway in your front yard or backyard or like near you that is causing more stormwater to collect in your property, if you don't have proper drainage in your community, then you might end up with more standing water in your property. And that's going to be something that is largely out of your control.
And it's still, I only have 40 seconds here, Crystal, but it's not just little areas where water can collect. They like wooded things. They like debris. Do they like bushes?
Not particularly bushes. They do feed off of nectar of flowers. So that's where they're getting some food. That's where the males feed and the females feed. But they really like those intermittent low areas in the forest. So the puddles in the forest that'll stand for maybe 10 days or so, they find that area particularly great in breeding. And they can actually tell if it's dry, they can lay the eggs in dry land. And when mosquitoes, the water hits, it'll breed out.
Crystal Swinger is Director of Environmental Health for Mecklenburg County. We're talking about mosquitoes, and we will continue that conversation and get into the nitty-gritty and even more in a moment. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. I'm Mike Collins. We're talking about mosquito as we approach the height of mosquito season with some mosquito experts. Dr. Chris Paradise is the professor and chair of biology and environmental studies at Davidson College, who specializes in many things, but among them, mosquitoes. Crystal Swinger is director of environmental health for Mecklenburg County. And Zach Turner is our climate reporter here at WFAE News. There have been experiments, Chris, to find ways to lower the population of mosquitoes by breeding sterile males. The males don't bite, they don't lay eggs, they don't carry disease, but they will mate with females who then lay infertile eggs and the population dies out. Do you know the outcome of these experiments? Is it beginning to work? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because everything serves a purpose.
I'm not sure about those particular experiments, but I know that there have been trials in Australia and Southeast Asia where they've actually been able to put a bacteria, infect mosquitoes with a particular bacteria that affects their reproduction. Maybe those are the studies that you're talking about. And so that those studies have had really good outcomes with a species of mosquito called Aedes aegypti, which we do have around here. It's also, the common name is the yellow fever mosquito, but it carries dengue. fever, and that's what this particular research group is trying to fight in those areas. And they've also found that this bacteria competes inside the competes for space, for resources inside the mosquito, and those mosquitoes not only have their reproduction affected, but also have lower concentrations or abundances of the dengue virus.
As I said, everything has a purpose in the ecosystem, yeah. And I'm just curious what the purpose of a mosquito is. We recently did a show on bats, and I know that bats can eat their weight in mosquitoes every night, which I guess is a good thing for the bat, not a good thing for the mosquito. But what purpose do these things serve aside from feeding the bats?
My understanding is that bats don't actually eat that many mosquitoes. Okay. And it may depend on the bat species and the abundance of mosquitoes. But mosquitoes are so small, I think the bats are probably focusing more on larger things like moths and other nocturnal flying insects. But, you know, there are lots of species of birds that that target small insects like mosquitoes, flycatchers, gnatcatchers, bluebirds. And then as larvae, there are lots of things that eat mosquito larvae, small fish, amphibians, dragonfly, nymphs. And so they're food. They're part of the food web. I guess that's an important role.
Crystal, you mentioned nectar. Mosquitoes and nectar a second ago. And I read yesterday, according to the National Wildlife Federation, mosquitoes' primary food source is nectar, not blood. And those would seem to be very different substances. So why, to a mosquito, are they interchangeable?
No, so the nectar is their food source for all males, and then for the females, they'll actually eat the flowers too. So you'll see mosquitoes around your garden, and that's actually a good thing in your flowers. They only need that blood meal to get that protein to lay their eggs. For whatever reason, they're missing that protein to lay eggs, and they can only get it from another blood mammal species. So they get it from deers or turtles or us or birds in order for their eggs to develop.
So like bees, because they're hanging around flowers and they drink the nectar, they are pollinators. Is that accurate?
To some degree. They don't have the legs of a bee that's furry to catch all that pollen. But yes, they go from flower to flower, and whatever pollen's on their proboscis, they can transfer.
So this is also the only place on the radio you'll hear the word proboscis. Public radio. This is it. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure that mosquitoes are not very efficient pollinators. As Crystal said, you know, they're definitely not as good as bees, especially honeybees and bumblebees. So I think that in terms of their role as pollinators, I think it's pretty minimal.
Okay. Talk to me about how we prevent them, Crystal. If you have, they like flowers. They drink the nectar, etc. And so, as you said, the females eat the flowers sometimes. So we have flowers in our garden, flowers around the house, and so we're attracting these beasts. What do we do to keep them away? Are there baits? Are there safe? Do citronella candles work? What works?
So the citronella does work, and like lemon oil grass and eucalyptus oil, those are effective, but they just have a very small range. So if you light up those citronella candles, you may have a 10-foot range around you that will kind of ward them off. That's kind of your barrier. But we, as public health, we just focus on tip and toss. So just prevent those mosquitoes from breeding on your property. That way you're going to make them travel a long way to get to you, and chances are they're going to pass by a lot of other people, and they'll get them first before you. So
what is it about citronella that they don't like? Is it the smell? Is it the smoke? What is it?
It's kind of both. It's kind of that just mix of sensory. So they kind of look for carbon dioxide, heat and any kind of the body chemicals that come off as well. So we have one bait that we have that's really awful. It's based off of toe jam smell. And so we put that out there because it's a hard human smell and it attracts a certain species really well. It's really terrible. But so the mosquitoes can kind of gauge on that. So that kind of puts up a barrier of smell around there. So it smells like lemongrass, eucalyptus, citronella, those
What
things.
about these bug zappers that have ultraviolet light?
I love insects, so I don't really like the bug zappers because it kills everything. Like whatever flies into it is going to get lit up. And so, yes, a mosquito flies by, but it's not going to be attracted to that in order to decrease the population.
And we have a.
Right. Yeah, I would be concerned about harming beneficial insects.
We also have a question from a listener who started using mosquito dunk buckets and stopped spraying. And they'd like your thoughts on this switch and its level of success. And if you know what they are, tell us what a dunk bucket is.
I believe that's referring to where you put a bucket out and you actually are attracting mosquitoes to lay eggs there and then you're
Okay.
dumping it out. It's on the growing trend of doing these things, but for me, if you're attracting them to there to lay their eggs, it's really just best just to tip it out. So some people swear by it and I'm like, have at it. But really just the tipping tossing is really the key.
But I read yesterday about these things, and evidently the mosquitoes get in because they're attracted, but they can't get out. So they lay their eggs, but they can't get out. Is that what's happening with these things?
Those are not the ones I've seen. So
Okay.
that may be a natural trap.
Okay.
And we actually do have that when we're looking for sending in eggs to be tested. We have one that they'll lay eggs and when it hatches, it goes into a specific container. But the ones I've seen out in public are just buckets that the people want them to lay eggs in, so they dump it out. So they find that to be preventive for themselves.
So the BBC reported recently on what it called a warmer, sicker world, Zach, and they cited mosquitoes carrying deadly diseases on an, quote, unstoppable march across the United States. I thought they flew, but okay, we'll let them march. Some of the diseases that are now cropping up here have been associated traditionally with warmer climates, the tropics and places like that. And the temperature has been rising here, but for the incidence of these diseases to rise as well, that means insects must be migrating. Is that what's happening?
Well, I would say that the conditions that are favorable, like we've already talked about, that when things are warmer, when things are more humid, that creates conditions that are more favorable for some of these species, in this case, mosquitoes. And as more and more of the United States starts to resemble that climate, as relative humidity starts to creep up in a lot of areas, North Carolina again was already hot, already humid a lot of the year. But as other parts further up north are becoming increasingly humid and increasingly warm, that's providing more area for these mosquitoes and other insects to travel and migrate.
You report, as I've said, on because you're our climate reporter on climate for WFAE, and we are experiencing all kinds of weather changes here. We're because of the climate, we're longer droughts, drier droughts, wetter storms, more flooding, more wildfires as a result of drought and heat and lightning and things like that. And this adds up to billions and billions and billions of dollars in damage. And yet the current administration is turning its back on clean and renewable energy sources in favor of fossil fuels, which we know play the key role in whatever human contribution to the warming planet may be. So usually money talks. This is costing a lot of money. It's costing insurance companies money, etc. Why is money not talking now?
Part of it to me seems like a lack of association between, like, not just the immediate effects of a disaster. We're seeing an increase in these billion-dollar or multi-billion-dollar weather-related disasters in the United States. But in addition to just the initial impact, the damaged infrastructure, the lives lost, and homes destroyed, there's also these long-term health impacts that follow disaster, such as when you have sewer overflows in a particular town or city, that's going to lead to increased risks of gastrointestinal illnesses downstream. You also have a heightened risk of respiratory illness in communities where folks are sheltering, where they've been displaced from their homes, and now they're gathering in these other locations and are able to spread disease in that way. And so I think there's also just like maybe not that association of these longer term costs to public health getting associated to the initial sort of source, like a hurricane, tropical storm, like we saw with Tropical Storm Chantal or with Hurricane Helene. And so it's just a, it sounds to me kind of like an accounting error, just not fully understanding the ways in which these natural disasters have myriad impacts on our lives.
How can we not understand that? Seriously, I mean, it's bringing different diseases that we've never seen before. It's bringing these weather events that we've never experienced before, or we experience them once every 100 years, and now it's every 2.5 weeks.
Right.
How can people not notice this? How can insurance companies, how can builders, how can people who make their living on building and repairing infrastructure not notice this and the costs being incurred?
Well, I think insurance companies definitely do.
Well, then why aren't they applying pressure? Why isn't it working?
I mean, they've made adjustments in terms of, I guess, the ways that policies are offered and then, you know, the raising of rates and stuff like that. In terms of actual lobbying effort, that is a good question for them.
Okay. Viruses and diseases spread by insects, particularly these mosquitoes that we've been talking about today, Dr. Paradise, are things that we haven't seen in this area in some cases before. Is the medical establishment equipped to recognize somebody presenting with an illness that is mosquito-borne that perhaps is new to Charlotte?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some doctors may not be able to diagnose one of these diseases if they've not seen it before. But I think that's probably a question that Crystal might be able to address better than me.
Crystal?
Yeah, I mean, our office is very close to the international airport where we see just thousands and thousands of people coming in and out from all over different countries at different times of year. And so that is just makes us very, very much aware of who is traveling where, what illness did they bring with them? And that's really one of the first questions is, have you traveled outside the country? What things do we need to be involved in? And so we are connected to listservs that say, hey, we've got this particular disease is on the rise in this area. And so we kind of just read those documents and kind of stay abreast of what's kind of the highs and lows of what's going on globally.
Mosquitoes, they're everywhere and they're itchy. And we're talking about them on WFAE. A few years ago, UNC Charlotte and the Mecklenburg County Health Department, Crystal, were collaborating on an effort to determine which factors in the environment lead to hotspots of mosquito activity. And aside from what we already know about not having standing water sources around your yard and clearing out underbrush, do you know of anything that they learned about these hotspots that might aid us in preventative measures?
Not particularly from that study, but just with the overall increase in construction, you're going to have more runoff and you're actually going to have more heat in the evening. So as to Zachary's point, it may not be getting hotter during the day, but it's not getting as cool in the evening. And that's having a warmer evening can really impact that. And you have water that's diverting in ways. In ways it hasn't diverted before and in new areas. And so those are kind of two combinations that we are keeping track of.
And Mecklenburg County, as I understand it, provides services for mosquito control. I didn't know this. I understand you can call the county. They will come out and they will assess your property as a breeding ground and give you tips on ridding yourself of these pests. How does that work?
So that's through the Environmental Health Department. So they can call our office and just instigate a service request and we'll come out and find the breeding source. And if it's to the degree that it's a lot, we may put out a light trap out there to decrease the adult population that's out there as well.
And Doctor, some mosquitoes can travel a fairly far distance. Others, a couple of miles. I mean, but others can only go a couple of meters, a couple of hundred meters, which is not very much at all. So if you have a mosquito problem and you're treating it, but your neighbors are not, are you doing yourself any favors? Does this have to be a communal effort?
Oh, for sure. It takes a village, right? So I've helped out, like locally, neighbors that have having mosquito problems, and I tell them that they have to convince their neighbors to also dump, you know, dump their flower pots, etc.
When it comes to mosquitoes, we're all in this together. We need to investigate Hillary Clinton's mosquitoes. Chris Paradise, professor and chair of the Biology and Environmental Studies Department at Davidson College. Crystal Swinger, director of environmental health for Mecklenburg County. And Zach Turner, WFAE's climate reporter. Thank you all for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. For more information about Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com.